Welcome to McGuire on the Wire, where you'll discover top stories and strategies in specialty tax broken down by our experts. You'll also meet leaders from across the firm who will discuss McGuire Sponsel's approach to common challenges faced by our clients.
I'm Dave McGuire. On today's episode, I sit down with Ben Worrell, a consultant in our credit and incentive services practice, to discuss the importance of timing and staying ahead of growth projects to secure valuable incentives. He'll explain the role of leverage in the incentive process and how CPAs can proactively discuss and identify incentive opportunities with their clients. Thank you for joining us. My name is David McGuire, and today I'm joined by Ben Worrell. Ben works in our credits and incentive practice, specifically with a lot of CPA firms and helping them understand the opportunities within that credits and incentives practices. Ben, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So, Ben, can you just give me a quick overview of what we mean by credits and incentives?
Sure. When we're talking through the various credits and incentives are out there, and I know that means a lot of different things to different people. Primarily what my group is talking about is those discretionary incentives that are available from state and local governments. So that starts to blend into this area of the SALT practice that's in a lot of different CPA firms that's out there. But when people hear just that credits term, that can mean a lot of different things to different people. Is that historic tax credits? Is that work opportunity tax credits? Is that new market tax credits? Our group particularly focuses on state and local discretionary incentives. So what does that kind of involve? That can involve job creation largely. That can involve new investment type credits that are out there for machinery equipment, for new building in particular. It can also involve training dollars, grant dollars that are available, mostly things that are going to be in that discretionary nature.
So are there specific types of companies that tend to benefit more from these?
Yes. So this really gets back to a foundational issue of economic development 101. What are communities trying to support within their particular community, their area? And that always gets back to manufacturing. Manufacturing is a slam dunk no matter what. If you're producing a widget, a product that's leaving that community and bringing new dollars, that new capital back into the community, many of the programs that are available out there are going to work to incentivize those types of things. When we start to think about that other investment side, new building and things like that, we can talk to developers a lot of times. So if they're building a spec building, for example, that could have a multiplicity of different users, whether that's logistics and distribution, whether that's a manufacturer, whatever that may be, those can be other recipients of credits and incentives, the discretionary side of things. Where it really doesn't work is on retail. I like to say that economic development credits and incentives has an asterisk at the end of all of it. If we're talking about an overall development, so a commercial development, we're going to have an anchor tenant, it's going to be a grocery store of some type, or maybe it's a movie theater or something else that may be there, and we're talking about kind of a $25 million commercial developments out there, that development that may have lots of sub-retail components underneath it could be incentivized.
Now, I've heard in certain states, and I've talked to certain CPAs, and they go, oh, we already applied for this grant or this program. Does it still make sense? Maybe not in that situation, but someone that already knows, okay, statutorily I get these types of credits. Does it still make sense to bring someone like you into the equation?
Absolutely. Again, what we're looking at is the discretionary side of things. So oftentimes there are those statutory credits that we want to help make sure you're A, maximizing the opportunity that's available to you, but B, it's also important to bring in an expert that's going to say, how do you maximize the benefit while minimizing the commitments, if that makes sense? So if we're gonna hire 50 people that are out there, but we know that if we only have to hire 30 of them to maximize the credit or the incentive that's available to them, again, we wanna talk through that process. And that when we're talking about this discretionary nature to credits and incentives, that's why it's so important for us to have a discussion around what is negotiation and how does that work inside of this. With that discretionary side, that means that there's bandwidth underneath it. How do we get to the maximum amount available? Is it 100%? Is it up to 10 years? Well, how do we get to 10 years worth of benefit for that particular client? They may be aware of it. They've likely read about press releases of other companies that have received benefits, and they can say, well, I know the mayor, or I know whoever this is. I can have that discussion that's there. That may be well and true, and it may be really good that relationship is already established, but understanding what is the maximum amount available and having that advocate on your side, that expert that's there, that's where we help make a difference.
In some of your writing, whether it's in Accounting Today or other places, one of the things that you really talk a lot about is that timing issue, the kind of that interplay of the leverage and the timing as it relates to gaining these incentives. Mm-hmm. Why is timing so important?
That's a great question, and it's probably the number one key item when we talk about credits and incentives. We have to be in front of a project. Inherently, just an incentive, you know, we're going to give you something for you doing something. It has to, you have to set up all that negotiation, that discretionary side that we just talked about. You have to set that up in advance of the project. If you've already built the building, why should someone incentivize you to build that building and make that investment? You've already done it. So why should they then give you the quote-unquote reward for doing that when you've already done it? Now, you can have a lot of debate as to what the merits of that are, but that's just kind of the nature of the beast and how it works. So anytime that we are in front of a project, that always helps us to be able to maximize the opportunity there for the client. So prior to shovels going in the ground, steel going vertical, permits being pulled, in some cases even a letter of intent being signed, you know, and that's going to be different for every single location that we look at. In the state of Kentucky, for example, if you've signed a letter of intent, well, that's already demonstrated that you've, you know, taken steps to say this is where the project's going to be. Therefore, the state cabinet that reviews all of these projects could say the project's guaranteed for Kentucky, so we're not going to support it at this point in time.
Okay.
In other areas, you know, we can utilize that to say that's a portion of our due diligence phase. So we think that this would be a best opportunity. We wanted to confirm that this, you know, that the runway is essentially clear for us to keep moving forward. However, because we haven't made that final decision yet, we've still got leverage opportunity.
For my edification, are we talking about real dollars here? Are we talking, you might get a couple thousand dollars? Or are we talking bigger dollar amounts that really change the dynamics of a project?
It really can change the dynamics of a project. And I don't know how many times we've talked with CPAs and their end user clients that have been astonished by how much these incentives can be worth. In a lot of cases, to put some kind of meat on the bones, if you will, the job creation incentives at a lot of different state levels can be worth between $3,000 to as much as $10,000 per job created. Now, that's realized over time in most cases, so that can be realized over a 2 to a 10 year period, but it's real dollars. And if you have significant job growth that's going to happen, if you have a manufacturer that says, gosh, if we win this contract, we need to bust out that wall because we're already tapped out right now. So we need to bust out this wall. We need to add on another 20, 50,000 square feet, put another line, maybe two in over there, and then we have to staff those lines. All of those things are those key triggers for a good credits and incentives project, because you've got real estate, you've got tangible personal property with the equipment, and you've got new jobs that are coming in. So all of those key features then help us to drive and maximize credits and incentives. On the real estate side of things and on the personal property tax, if we're putting numbers to it, you know, I usually like to have round numbers between 5 and 10% of that investment value is what can be realized as tax savings. So we're talking $1 million in investment, could be as much as $100,000 worth of benefit. We've looked at some other areas that CPAs can really kind of key into, and CPAs have a unique position with their end user clients because they have access to a lot of really important data. That data comes in the form of payroll reports. So probably our biggest struggle with CPAs from the credits and incentives team is that inherently it's a retroactive leaning or retroactive looking occupation. What we do and what is so unique is we're forward leaning. And obviously, you know, if we all had that crystal ball, we'd be making money off of it, not necessarily using it here for credits and incentives. But when we look out into the future, when we can hear about those trigger points that can say, hey, there may be an opportunity, that's a great time for you to give us a call.
So really right now, if people are listening to this timely, right after this gets released, we're in a tax planning, tax filing season. So if we're talking about early 2022, we're going to be in the 2021 tax filing season. So as we're looking at that, what questions can a CPA be asking to determine if looking at incentives is something they need to think about moving forward?
Absolutely. I'd say your primary two two things to take a look at is what has happened over that last year. And you can see that in payroll. Has the payroll increased for the year? Obviously, we can have just inflation increases overall in the wages. But if there has been significant increase in the payroll, that likely means that they've added jobs. Ask the question. When you talk with that business owner, especially the end of year planning or starting to talk about, here's what we're going to do for that tax return, talk to your clients and ask them the question, have you added headcount this year? And when we talk about new jobs, it's not just replacing turnover, right? It has to involve net new headcount that's being added into the company. The other thing to look at is, again, that personal property tax return. Has that increased? Is it just replacement of equipment, or have we added new equipment? If the answer is yes, we've added new equipment, or maybe even if we've just replaced equipment, that's, do we look to continue to do that in the future? That's another question that the CPA can be asking their end user client.
It seems like if these move forward, this is also a good way for CPAs to really tie themselves into their client on a long-term proactive basis.
Absolutely. And I think anyone that would bring a $100,000 check to their clients and say, gee, we found this for you, aren't you happy? In most cases, people would be happy. Now they're going to be asking, okay, what strings are attached to that? And that's where we get into another area of credits and incentives when we start talking about the compliance and the reporting. Okay, how do I pull down on that overall bucket? Ben, you talked about these, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. Well, okay, how do we get actual access to that? And that happens, again, over time. You have to demonstrate that if we say we're going to hire 25 people, we have to demonstrate that we're hiring people over time. People don't just write checks for nothing that's out there. So oftentimes, credits and incentives are performance-based. You have to make the investment first, you have to add the jobs first, and then you get the value of that incentive back to you. And that can come in a variety of different ways, whether that's a tax credit, whether that's actual checks being cut from the Department of Revenue or the Department of Commerce, whatever that means inside your particular state. Again, we can explore those opportunities, but more importantly, we can also make sure that we're filing timely to make sure you're receiving the full benefit.
So you just said that there's a lot of compliance proving that you've made these hires, everything else. Well, obviously we're sitting here in a job market like many people have not seen before, where it's hard for companies to hire. Mm-hmm. How is that affecting that compliance, or is it throwing any of these off where someone might have projected to hire 100 employees, let's say, towards the end of 2021, and they might not be able to find them? Is that affecting their payouts on these incentives?
It certainly can, but it depends on which program they've set up for. So if we did focus on that job creation program, oftentimes the benefit from those job creation programs comes through the increase in payroll. If you're having to pay more now for one employee than you would have for just one employee the year before, you've still increased the payroll, and therefore you can still get the benefit from that. Maybe you haven't increased as many headcount as you had, but you've had to increase your job skills that's there, or you've had to go out there and just the market has pushed up in wages that are associated with that. So that's where you still can see a benefit from it. The other interesting thing, and this gets a little bit off the topic there, what we're particularly watching for here in 2022, as far as a lot of state legislators are going back and reviewing their economic credits and incentives programs, is that we're trying to see what automation does. Because we know that in the job market that we have out there right now, there's tremendous opportunity if you're an employee seeking employment. But if the business is having troubles finding employees to come in and work at that point in time, they are also starting to look more towards the investment incentives that are out there. So if I'm doing more with automation, robotics, different things like that, is there now an opportunity to also set up another credits and incentives deal, a project at the end of the day, to incentivize that investment over the jobs that you may have there? So you may still have a period of time where you can capture the value on that new jobs that you're adding, and that's good. But then let's also start talking about the investment side and making sure you're getting tax credits for that.
Now, have we seen any change in states' desire towards these post-COVID? Has it gone up or down as either states first thought they were not going to have cash, but then as they're not using all of maybe their federal proceeds from COVID, they're getting more cash? Are we seeing any change in states' desire to incentivize specific projects?
Yeah, well, COVID disrupted everything, and that was a difficult thing, especially for those employers that said, hey, we projected out that we were going to have 25 people, but right now we've got 5, and we're struggling to fill those positions. So we can certainly see and help support the clients through that process. again, that negotiation side that we started off with at the beginning, it doesn't really end either. So having an expert that's on your team there to help watch for the deadlines that are due, having that person also negotiating on behalf of what has happened over the life of the project. We said we're going to create 25. We only created 5. Are we out of compliance now? Well, what are some of the avenues or the mechanisms that we can utilize in the negotiation process to make sure that nobody's penalized for that stuff? That's kind of one of the first areas. But then making sure that we can look towards other programs or other things that may be available. Let's say with, you know, federal dollars that are coming through, maybe there's now a new initiative to invest inside of training to get employees, current employees, skilled up. So relying on that workforce that you already have, skilling them up to be able to fill the needs that you thought you were going to have to hire additional people for. If there's cash dollars available now to put them through an additional training so that the new robotics machine that you brought in to help with the automation side, who's going to run that now?
So you said that you can work on the negotiations. It's important to have somebody helping with the compliance. In a situation where maybe you were supposed to hire 25, you were only able to hire 5 due to the job market, COVID, et cetera. What would happen if the reverse were true? Let's say I was supposed to hire 25 and I'm on track to hire 50. Do I need to renegotiate my incentives at that point, or are most of the packages that are negotiated, do they give that flexibility to grow beyond that point?
That's a great question, and I'll answer it that it depends on the state and on the particular program that's there. And that's why you want that kind of trusted advisor that's there from the outset to say, hey, we want to be watching for these key triggers, because there may be a phase 2 at that point in time. We may be on track to exceed our phase 1, so let's go ahead and get it set up for a phase 2 after that point in time. So that's just making sure that you're aligning a particular program that's available within the state, within a locality, with the benefit that you're seeing over time. And through that compliance reporting, you want to make sure that again, your trusted advisor, your experts that are there are looking out for those key opportunities.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot of great opportunities there, and it sounds like something that could really help CPAs key in better with their clients and become more of that trusted advisor.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Ben, for joining us today. If anyone that's listening has any questions, please feel free to reach out to Ben or anyone else at McGuire Sponsel that you feel comfortable reaching out to, and we can talk about this further in person.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you have clients with growth plans on the horizon, feel free to reach out to our Credits and Incentive Services team to discuss these opportunities. Contact information can be found in the show notes.
This has been McGuire on the Wire. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and follow us on social @McGuireSponsel to get more industry news and firm updates.